Chapter 33, smash it up!
Our afternoon with Xerxes in the Alma finishes as it begins with another story about Johnny Moped, which doesn't feature your actual Johnny Moped and Fred Burke story, which, true to be told, doesn't really feature very much of Fred Burke either. Ever surprising, until the very end, Xerxes has just been telling us that he used to be good friends with Rob Gretton from Factory Records. I used to see Joy Division quite a lot, he reveals, which in turn reminds us that in many ways, Fred Burke was a kind of proto-post-punk with his long grey coat and his full beard at the time, as Kayser Laserbeam pointed out a few thousand light words ago. Beards were terrifically uncool indeed. And this may come as something as a colossal shock to the facial fuzz-waxing hipsters of the new century. They were so terrifically uncool in the late 70s that Joy Division's Peter Hook seemingly wore his like some whiskery badge of pride. Maybe it was a perverse bass player thing. Oh, Fred had a beard when he was 12, recalls Xerxes proudly. He was the coolest kid in school. He needed to shave a lot, but he didn't like work. Him and Ray got jobs in the Woodpecker Pet Products factory, and they were basically making cages for hamsters, parrots, things like that. When you see Ray and you ask, what was the best job you ever had? He will say, Woodpecker Pet Products. There was this guy called Bruce, who was 6'2" and about 20 stone, and he used to come to work all glammed up, tottering around in these big stack heels, and everything was fine unless the suite were being played on the radio. When the suite came on, this being 1972, you would hear the suite quite a lot on the radio. Bruce would go mad and get a hammer and smash all the cages up. They couldn't stop him. And he used to work all week and he'd owe the Woodpecker Pet Product Company money for all the cages he'd broken. I mean, I've never really had a job like that where the job is shit and the money's terrible, but you've had the time of your life. I don't think they make jobs like that anymore. So Bruce didn't like the suite then. Oh, he loved the suite. He absolutely adored them. I mean, who couldn't have loved the suite in 1972? You'd have to be some kind of brainless moron not to. I mean, they were one of the greatest groups ever made. It's things like that, which we came out of that, Top of the Pops generation. I remember when we went to see Alvin Stardust and we tried to get him to touch us because he was right at the start of his career when he was totally untouchable and he got rather upset. So in spite of the absentee singer, the drunk bassist, the nudie video, the dubious lyrics, the band, or not so, as the case may be, singles and the general rank air of utter otter chaos, which surrounded the band in their supposed heyday, was there ever the slightest chance that Johnny Moped could have bothered those very same Top of the Pops bookers? In theory, but we weren't prepared to do anything about it. Xerxes smiles happily. I mean, yeah, we could understand that if we were going to sit down and make a rock opera with Johnny Moped on the chord organ, making the words up as he goes along, and us doing something behind him, being obscure and decorous, then yeah, we could be on Top of the Pops. It might mean a bit of a culture change for the rest of the population for us to get there. And we can't imagine the production staff thinking this is the way forward, though. The thing is, me and Ray saw things differently. This was a road and eventually Burt Bacharach or someone like that would hear the Moped voice and think, I've got to write big orchestration, big numbers for this bloke, with a voice as rough as a file. He's going to be the next Dusty Springfield. That didn't happen, but that's how I saw it. I hoped he'd become a TV celebrity or end up presenting a game show or something. So odd, because that's just what it should have been. We thought Johnny would be a great singing star, an all-round entertainer, but that just shows how perverse we are.